This is the Debugging Work Podcast.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Derek Hatchard. I spent my career in the tech industry in companies large and small, so I've seen firsthand how much modern work can be a hot mess. This podcast is a chance to discuss ways to make work better. Let's get started. My guest today is Sergio Pereira. Sergio was an advocate for remote work years before the pandemic forced everyone to start thinking about it. Over the past decade, he has worked in full-time and fractional CTO roles, hiring and leading teams distributed all over the world. He is the creator of the Remote Work Academy, the Remote Jobs Brain Trust, and the Remote Work Newsletter. We'll hear from Sergio in just a moment after a brief word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by BotWorks. BotWorks is your company's new AI task force at a fraction of the cost of an in-house team. For a fixed monthly fee, you get guaranteed monthly capacity for new development on chatbots, integrations, tools, and workflow automations, while BotWorks handles all the ongoing maintenance. And you can cancel at any time and take your code with you. BotWorks gives you the expertise of industry-leading engineers for less than the cost of a single junior developer. Take your company from the internet age to the intelligence age. Go to botworks.dev and save 40% on your first month. That's botworks.dev, and tell them that Derek sent you. Hi, Sergio. Welcome to Debugging Work. It is a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for making the time to do this.
Thank you, Derek. Thanks for the invitation and thanks for having me.
I have been following you for a while. I really respect the thoughts that you've been putting out into the world about, you know, what does it mean to, you know, to work remotely. And I just want to have a conversation here about building a remote first team. I think that that's a unique problem that a lot of leaders haven't tackled before. And I know that you've thought deeply about sort of hiring and mentoring. So maybe let's start there. Can you like just share a little bit about how you approach this unique challenge, what your strategies are, what works really well for you?
Yeah, so it's fun because it has been a long time since I did it differently, to be honest. I've been building teams fully remote since around 2016, 17. So time flies. It's already a few years in. But I evolved a lot my understanding of remote as well. For me right now, there are a few things that I take for granted just because I've been doing it for so long. For instance, hiring is something that I recall used to be a nightmare. Like I would need to find the best people in my city, probably engage recruiters, you know, compete for the local rates and all that. So, interviews would be in the office. So even scheduling and all that, I recall that being a nightmare. Like I would do nothing else pretty much that week or a couple weeks of intensive hiring. And remote kind of changes the game because I put the job opportunities up and suddenly I get hundreds of applicants and I need to review them, get them through technical sort of testing grounds. And it's much easier to hire, like by an order of magnitude. So hiring is definitely something that I would not ditch remote work at all because I think it's made much, much more peaceful.
One of the things that I have found that can be overwhelming hiring remotely is once you've opened up your role to the world, the size of the applicant pool can be hard. How are you managing that piece around like you can get so many good candidates, but how do you then narrow that down?
But that's the good problems in life, right? The worst problem than that I used to have before is, oh, I have my job listing up for a week and it's like a handful of candidates and I need to have a recruiter to squeeze in another like 10 candidates or so. You know, it feels really good to have like 200 people to review. And indeed, as you say, it creates a new set of problems. Like, okay, now it's maybe too much. How can I get through all of them? And what I believe it does is instead of me having to sell aggressively to candidates, like having a first round of interview and tell the candidate how good the company is and why this is a solid opportunity and why they should be really interested in joining. Now it's kind of the other way around. I can have a first part of the process for example, more focused on technical rounds with like take-home tests or stuff like that, that validate both candidates' motivation and candidates' skills, so that then the first round of interview is a short technical chat. And only after that, with the few remaining candidates that have already proved themselves to a certain degree, we go through the proper typical interviews after that. So I kind of flip the interview process around. Instead of sort of HR chat, technical interview, culture interview, now it's more like first bit of the process is mostly asynchronous. Candidates complete some tests on their own work, on their own time. They submit some work. That work is sort of reviewed automatically for the first bit. Like imagine for most of the roles I hire are software development type of roles. So that is typically they open a pull request and there's some script merging, running a bunch of tests, unit tests against that, and basically returning sort of a score, and they would pass upon a certain number of tests that goes through successfully. So that is something I would not be able to do before, and now I can. And ultimately, it results in having like 10 or 20 candidates that are super engaged. They have proved relevant technical skills. And then I start the proper interview process with those.
That's super insightful. And that is probably an advantage that people who haven't hired a lot of remote workers probably haven't, or at least haven't been open to hiring from anywhere, haven't experienced that. Like, you don't have to sell as hard up front. I love that, actually. Like, go straight to the prove that you have the technical chops, and then let's figure out if it's the right role, because you're already motivated. I can find 20 people who are highly motivated and are competent from anywhere, as opposed to having to really scramble to get them in my local market, especially if I'm in a small local market.
Exactly. And sometimes it's not just small, it's really expensive, especially in some cities in the US is really competitive. Like hiring someone locally in, let's say, the Bay Area, it's a bloodbath. Still, even in the out market, it's still a bloodbath.
Yeah. Have you found that your remote hires also have longer tenures?
Well, there are people who stay long, there are people who stay short. Obviously, there's everything. I think talking about the companies I worked at and the clients I worked with, and in most of them, I was heavily involved in either hiring or managing or both. There's actually a lot of data around average tenure in tech companies for software development roles, which is on average 18 months or so. There's even these charts like Uber, Google, whatnot, the average tenure for each of them. I have, for instance, a team that I put together back in 2017. First time I worked remote, and most of the people in that team, they are still working there. So that is a much longer than average tenure. That is like 6 years so far, 7 years, which is way above average for any tech measure. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, you definitely get on the companies that try to hire people from low cost of living areas, on salaries that are clearly low for US standards, although they accept them because it's still interesting for their local market rates, those people tend to have short tenures because obviously they use that as a stepping stone. They know there are companies paying rates independent of location, so they would eventually move and apply to those and get one and move. And sometimes tenures are like 1 year, 18 months or something like that. I don't particularly think that remote work affects tenure negatively, except for this case where you purposefully underpay people because they are in places that you know the cost of living is lower. I mean, they will eventually find a better role and churn for that reason. Whenever you pay remote roles properly and people don't have that need to leave for the money, tenures, I believe, in my experience, tend to be actually much more longer than average on tech. And I have a track record of teams I put together where people are still there after, in that case, 6 years, 4 years. I have a team that most of the team is still there after 4 years. And then obviously there are companies who have done layoffs or startups that struggled or teams that had changes in leadership and some people left for those reasons. So there's always these sort of things that happen in the day-to-day that cause people to leave for some reason. So that is not people leaving because, you know, they are not well where they are.
Yeah, I think that's an underappreciated benefit of remote is if you give someone the ability to structure their work life in the way that makes sense for their personal situation, that's so customized and bespoke to the individual. That is incredibly hard to give up. And I've heard you say, you know, I really don't care how long someone spends working on something in terms of like what part of the day that they're doing the work, as long as they're getting the outcome. Right. And that is so valuable to the individual. Like if I know that my kid has piano practice after school and I need to go pick them up and I'm going to be at a, you know, away from my desk for 2 hours, but I can, you know, I'll make up that time after my kid goes to bed. You end up making your job fit your life and you still bring the value to the company. I mean, that is such a win-win in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that is probably the biggest reason why people actually have longer tenures in remote work is, I mean, there's nothing to dislike unless there are obviously specific things about the company, but you get to work from, let's say, Portugal in my case, or India or Brazil or Spain or whatever, to a startup in the US that pays a US salary, well, a low US salary, which for those local markets is actually a very, very interesting salary. It's a win-win. So it's a sort of sustainable relationship because the company from the US is sort of affording in salary budget, but those employees feel that they are earning a really high salary for comparing to their local peers. And they can basically manage their day, and most of these technical positions, or increasingly, they tend to not be overloaded with meetings. So one thing I had in my early days of remote work, working for US startups, is that I would have a lot of calls in late night my time, which is not so nice if you have kids and all that. Now more and more teams are distributed. So it's not like everyone doing US hours. It's just them self-organizing whatever time works for them all. So people basically don't really have an incentive to leave. They are in a company that pays them well, that gives them this level of freedom, and they just need to deliver, which is actually just the one thing that the company needs. It's like, I need you to deliver the product or the service or the marketing campaign or whatever that I need to make my business grow. So I think it's a super sustainable type of relationship that tends to have longer tenures in my experience.
You're a fractional CTO. Actually, can you define that quite quickly for everyone, fractional CTOs? And then I have a follow-on question for you.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, you're right. At the moment, I work as a fractional CTO for early stage startups, mostly US-based. So what that means is that instead of coming in full time and aiming for a long-term collaboration, I work with these companies when they are going through some period of change. Imagine a startup that has just raised funding and they want to basically ditch their software development agency and build an in-house team, or they want to replace their MVP that is glued together with Zapier jobs or whatever and will not scale at all. They want to basically refactor that from scratch into a proper bespoke build done in-house, scalable architecture and all that. I basically help companies go through that. So my collaborations tend to be much shorter than a typical full-time job, like 6 months, sometimes even shorter, other times 1 year, sometimes over a year. I am typically not full-time, even for that period. I am either part-time, sometimes even lower, like tech advisory type of capacity. And I take part of the scope of work that would be the scope of work for a full-time CTO. I either take ownership of the technical part, the refactoring, and I coordinate the team around that, or the hiring, for example, building an in-house team and then phasing out the old team and documenting the whole thing and the processes and getting the team up to success, or a mix of all these things, because obviously every company is different, so I adapt a bit to the circumstances. But the point is I join, I get the company through from A to B, And then eventually my job is successful. So I phase myself out. Well, obviously talking with the company and all that. But when my job is done, I typically phase out my hours and I come back to a sort of advisory role or no formal role at all, just on call or something like that. So that is what a fractional CTO is. And frankly, I'm really enjoying it at the moment, working with companies from different industries, different tech stacks, even slightly different stages of growth, different founder personalities, different team compositions around the world. And I get to do the same problems again and again and again. So I become even better at it rather than if I was to do it every like 3 or 4 years for a new startup that I would be assembling from scratch. So yeah, that's how I work at the moment.
Thank you for defining that. So as a fractional CTO, you've worked with numerous teams. You would have teams that have already formed where you're coming in. You've got examples when you're replacing an agency and building a team. Earlier, we're talking about meetings. People who've grown up in a synchronous culture, especially in an office culture, are just used to being able to talk to somebody, you know, right now, face to face, or we're all going to get in the room tomorrow. Can you share a little bit, some combination of your experiences, but also your approach and what you see is what works really well and what doesn't work well in these teams in order for them to be successful? How do you nurture a highly effective remote team?
So what you're describing, this typical office culture, like tap on the shoulder, let's get into the meeting room and discuss this whatever thing. That also happens in remote teams, on Slack, for instance. Like you nag people, and then some teams have Slack buzzing all day, and they can't really do any meaningful work because there's no focus. Unless they mute something there, they are constantly getting distracted and pulled into meetings and thrown urgent work to be done, and it becomes a very ad hoc type of firefighting department. That really mimics the typical vibe in the office, which is people tapping on the shoulder, calling people into meeting rooms and discussing something over the water cooler or whatever. Those dynamics also happen in remote teams if you don't do anything proactively against that, because in fact, I don't think that is very productive at all. So what I tend to defend is the creation of asynchronous first processes. It's not that people don't talk with each other, obviously. It's just that if the default is so loud and busy, we just want to make the default, peaceful and, getting into a meeting, getting, together, or that tends to be the exception. And when done, it's done on purpose to discuss certain complex topic or plan a new quarter or, these bigger things tend to be better discussed in such collaborative environments, which I think meetings are great for. Now, the day-to-day transactional pace of things, I believe, can be done to a large extent asynchronously. And that's what I encourage my clients to do, especially because that untaps the opportunity to work with people around the world. So for a US startup, that means tapping into talent pools like India, Philippines, Pakistan, etc., whereas if you are working fully synchronous, those people are sleeping at the time you are working. So you would basically be limited to LATAM, which is nice as well, obviously, as a talent pool. But I think you would not be able to make it work across time zones in a meeting-heavy culture. So that is what I encourage my clients to define goals pretty well so that everyone understands the company, the business, the product, like how the product fulfills the business and creates value meaning typically revenue, ideally. There's this North Star metric that all activities in the company index to. And whenever, let's call it a software engineer is developing a feature, they know why they are developing that. How is that contributing to the business in terms of this North Star metric? Like, why is this important? And then I typically invest a lot in documentation so this understanding of the business and the product plus a good enough level of documentation tends to make people more independent. Imagine you are working in Canada and all your immediate peers for whatever effort you are doing are like in Europe, in Asia, time zones, they are all unavailable. They are all sleeping. And you are blocked. So you are less likely to get into that blocked position if you have a good understanding of the business, the product, and a good level of documentation about, let's call it technical details about the repo you are working on or the server you are deploying to or whatever the real the effort details are, so that you can take your best judgment and use that knowledge to do whatever you feel is best for your team and for to fulfill the goals that you are aiming to. So I think, first of all, is investing in people not needing to tap each other on the shoulder, even over Slack, in the first place. And then is creating processes for that to happen. For example, feature planning can, for the most cases, be done asynchronous. But you need to be proactive in teaching people in the team to actually be responsive, because the other flip side of async is a wait. So if people don't have a culture of actually contributing to those materials, then everyone is in a wait mode, which sucks. Nothing gets done. So you need to be proactive. I tend to tell my teams that great freedom comes with great responsibility. So responsibility is the responsibility to actually collaborate to the collateral, follow the deadlines. Like if there's a feature planning that I started or the product manager started, and these two people, like a front-end person and a back-end person, are required to chime in with whatever technical approach requirements, I mean, they have, let's say, 24 hours to read through it and get some feedback there, and so on and so forth. So with this level of shared responsibility, I think there's it's viable to create an async culture that works.
What's your advice to people who are working from home in an async culture and then end up feeling like they don't have enough human connection at work because they're never talking to anybody, everything is written and asynchronous?
I think that happens a lot. I also feel historically people have over-indexed to extract all of their social life from work, which I think is a bug, not a feature. Is a byproduct of a messed up work culture, which I think employers have incentivized over the years, because the more ties you build with your workspace, the less likely you are to leave. Or, you know, even if you are not promoted or you don't get the raise or your manager doesn't treat you well, you have those bonds sort of tying you to that workplace. I think in remote work is more difficult to foster that type of ties. So it's very common for people to feel more detached, which I think for a great part is actually pretty good, because people are kind of free to seek socialization outside work. There are people doing that, for example, working from co-working spaces, and they see the, you know, same faces every day, or there are people who basically work with family members or friends, or people who just work by themselves and coordinate their agenda around going to the gym or doing some hobby or some whatever activity that they enjoy. So I think there are downsides and upsides, and mostly the downside of people not feeling socially connected with their peers at work is basically a byproduct of, you know, being more independent to work from wherever they want. There are people, for example, I have a client with a lead developer who travels the world. He has this goal of visiting all countries on earth. So whenever I have a meeting with him, he's literally in a different country. So the other day he was in Cape Verde. The one previous, he was in Mexico. The previous one, he was in Brazil. So he's always in a different country. So for him, his thing is to travel. He's not socializing. He's just meeting new people in new places he's never seen and posting it on Instagram or whatever. That's fine. I mean, that is a way of behaving that was just not available if all of us were working in the office. So I think remote work, if anything, opens up possibilities. Certainly, some people are struggling because infinite freedom sometimes comes with a blocker. Like, if I can do anything, what will I do? You know? So I think people need to be more proactive about their socialization and not just trust their work environment to provide that.
Yeah, I think that's really wise. it forces you to be a little bit intentional about your life design and what's important to you. And, you know, your relationships outside of work are going to be more durable because work changes.
If you think about it, yeah, what I come to the conclusion when I talk with people is most of us have worked with dozens, if not hundreds of people, like directly over our professional life. And probably we kept in touch with just a handful of them, right? It's unlikely for people to stay connected with all these dozens of people as they move from job to job. Everything is kind of transactional and circumstantial. So as you say, with remote work, we get the opportunity to be more purposeful about the relationships we build and the lifestyle design, which I think is amazing, right?
100% agree with that. I have one more question for you, and then I want to ask you about some of the things that you have on the go. It's super interesting. You've been an advocate and a participant in remote work since, you know, what, 8 years or so. How has your philosophy and approach evolved, if it has, pre, mid, and post-pandemic?
It evolved a lot. Sometimes we talk about remote work as it being binary. Like I used to go to the office, now I'm at home. But my processes while working remote and managing teams remote have morphed a lot. Not necessarily because of the pandemic, because for me, in terms of work, it was just business as usual because I was already at home. I didn't have that big drastic change from one day to the other coming home. I was already in the same place and all my team as well. Certainly, there were a lot other dynamics, but you know, affecting people in many ways. But in terms of the work processes, it didn't necessarily affect that much. In the early days of remote work, I was basically mimicking the office online. I was hiring people from my city and then my country. We would have these daily stand-ups that we'd jump on a meeting. We would be constantly on Slack. We would jump on meetings for no reason, like, oh, what about this task? Oh, let's jump on a meeting so I can tell you. And it's like something that could be a one-liner update on Slack or structured Notion would already tell and avoid the question in the first place. So that was the early days. Then I extended that to hiring within a range of time zones around me. And the goal of that is, okay, let's not be on meetings like all day. Let's bucket meetings around certain hours of the day so that we overlap, all of us. And the rest, let's leave it to do the rest of the work, because I was already figuring out there's a lot of work that benefits from not having distractions. So let's respect that. And then I believe I went a step further, which is, okay, let's actually make this latter part a default. Let's make this deep work state of no distractions a default, and then just plan the meetings and the ceremonies around that. And then the meetings started becoming like a certain day of the week, certain time, you know, things that would clearly already feel like the exception. And that it was sort of a simple step to having processes that are async by default. I believe most people working remotely are still kind of in the first phase of mimicking the office and being frustrated because they are constantly on meetings, which I totally understand why.
You said two really interesting things during this conversation that kind of intersect that I love, which is you said, you know, make the default deep work, and you missed in earlier you said make the default peaceful, and I absolutely love that. Those are my pull quotes out of this whole conversation. For folks who are anywhere along this journey around remote work and they're looking for insights, you have several things already. You have your newsletter, which I subscribe to. You have something called the Remote Jobs Brain Trust. Can you just give us the quick pitch for those? Like what are they? What type of people should sign up for them?
Yeah, I've been writing online for a few years now, and some common challenges arise. One is about the processes, like how can people implement asynchronous processes, because obviously they need all people in the team coming together on those. And for that, I created Mastering Remote Work, which is my, I'd say, flagship course. Then there's another big set of people, which is people who understood this new reality that anyone from anywhere can work from companies in any country. And people want to figure out how to do it. And for those, I created the remote jobs brain trust, and which is a course and a community lectured by myself, helping people navigate, you know, all these application process and how to stand out for those remote jobs. I talk about all these in my remote work academy, remote-work.io. And I also have my newsletter there, which you mentioned, which I basically touch all these things in different editions based on the topic I select to write about each day. Comes out every Friday. So it's getting really popular, which I love. So let's keep it growing that way.
All right. I will put links in the show notes to your courses.
Courses. I have two courses.
Right. Courses, newsletter, the Brain Trust. You also have a thing called Jobs Copilot that you're working on.
I do. I'm very, very excited about being prominently a builder again in that specific project, which I'm addressing basically 10 hours a week to develop. And that is a compliment from the learnings I'm getting in the Remote Jobs Brain Trust, which is people, especially those who have full-time jobs but are so scared of layoffs these days because the market seems so uncertain, they want to apply to jobs so they have the feeling of safety and they can get better salary offers and all that. They just lack the time. So I created the jobscopilot.ai, which basically offloads a lot of that process, which is done automatically. And people are really enjoying it. It's still early days. I'm enjoying building it and launching it.
When does it launch?
It's launching. So we are recording January 2024. It's launching probably by the end of this month. So by the time this comes out, it's probably already live.
Awesome.
So yeah, jobscopilot.ai, if you are looking for a job or thinking of that, you should definitely sign up and get your LinkedIn profile there, and it does the rest to you. And hopefully you get some interviews booked automatically.
I love it. These are the sort of problems that I want AI to solve for the world. I do not care very much about the like image generation. I think that these things are the things that really make a difference to most people. You've been very generous with your time, Sergio. I have a lightning round for you. Three questions, short answers. I will put anything that you recommend into the show notes with links. First of all, what is a book, podcast, or video that you would recommend to people?
Yeah, I would recommend the podcast from Arvid Kal, the Bootstrapped founder, which is inspiring a lot on the Jobs Copilot journey. I think it changes the perspective. I come from a very VC-backed type of mindset, and learning from Bootstrapped founders how it can be done so much simpler, I think adds a lot of value and perspective.
Yeah, plus one to that one. And Arvid lives in Canada, so double thumbs up for me. is there a person, place, or thing that you'd like to shout out?
Yeah, I would like to shout out to Gurgel Yoris, the writer of the Pragmatic Engineer newsletter, which I think quickly made it to being basically something you cannot miss if you work in tech, especially in leadership positions. It's definitely my probably number one or close to that source of insights around the industry, best practices, how company X does it, insight. So I can only recommend it.
Plus one of that one as well. I love that newsletter. Okay. What is the most important superpower to develop in the modern workforce?
Yeah, that is a challenging one in the times of AI, really, because a lot of skills now, or at least a lot of people feel that their skills will eventually be replaced, and that is a fragile place to be. I think the superpowers that allow us to deliver value, regardless of whatever technology advancements, is that we will be building technology for people. So the ability to communicate, to sell a vision, to connect with other people in ways that are not simply transactional, I think is definitely a superpower. I would bucket that into communication more broadly, but is communication in this more purposeful, non-transactional sense of the word, build human connections, you know, create, you know, to sell to clients, to hire people into your team, to you know, build partnerships and all that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I know folks listening are going to get a ton of value out of it. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Thank you.
Find show notes at podcast.debuggingwork.com. Podcast over.